ॐ भारताय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कृतितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतं अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्बत्वामनुसन्ततामि भगवद्गीते
Chapter 10.
Maharshiya Satat Purve Chatwaro Manavastata Chatwaro Manavastata Madbhava Manasa Jata Madbhava Manasa Jata Yesham Loka Imaf Prajaha Yesham Loka Imaf Prajaha Maharshiya Sapta Purve Chatwaraha Manavaha Tata Madbhavaha Manasa Jataha Yesham Lokaha. Why is it Loka? Imaf Prajaha. Oh, that's right. Loka imaf prajaha. I forgot to send you a little blank on it. In verse 4 and 5, he went through and gave all of what the bhava, or all of the disposition, all of the dispositions and the things that come from Ishvara, the buddhi, the capacity to know, jnanam, the knowledge which you are able to know through the buddhi, the freedom from delusion, kshama, which the ability to accommodate, satyam, truth-telling, dhammaha, controlling the mind. He went through two verses of this, of all of those things that are natural and an expression of Ishvara, the dispositions and the things that are natural for Ishvara. So he went through verse 4 and 5, reciting those. And then he says, and Shankara has this as the little a connection between these verses, kincha, means, and further, Maharshiyaha Sapta Purve. He says the seven Maharishis, and in the beginning, formerly, at the beginning of the creation is the idea, in the beginning, the seven Rishis and the four Manus, Chatwaraha Manavaha, and similarly the four Manus, all of whom Madbhavaha, means all of whom have their mind filled with me. That bhava, I'll explain bhava in a minute, their mind is absorbed in me. All of them, whose mind by nature is absorbed in me, manasa jataha, they are those rishis and manus, and the four manus, they are all born of my mind. They are born from my mind. Krishna is talking as Ishvara. They are born from my mind. And all of these beings, all of these beings that are here now in this world, all of the beings of this world come from them. From whom all of these beings in this world have come. should be actually loke. Let me just check one thing here. Loke, not loka, loke imaha prajaha. From whom, all of these beings in the world have come. Okay? So this is the... If you're reading, if you're studying, like in the Puranas, the Vedic Puranas, or in the middle of the Vedas, the Karmakanda, the first portion of the Vedas that are talking about the cosmology or what happens, you know, when the universe comes, the universe itself, when we say the universe projects, is sustained and resolves, how they see that really is as though this is why we use examples like imagining a meadow. When you imagine a meadow, or imagine anything for that matter, if I ask you to imagine a universe, that's a sankalpa. The universe comes into being based upon your sankalpa or your resolve. You know, the Maya forms itself as a meadow. So we can say that's Ishwara's resolve or Ishwara's sankalpa. Now, if we look at the whole universe as coming into manifestation, that's why Swamiji will use the term manifest knowledge. The universe comes into manifestation just like your dream comes into manifestation, or your knowledge comes into manifestation, or your imagination comes into manifestation. So it's very... What you have in a very limited way, Ishwara has in an infinite way. And so, in fact, it's a good meditation just to kind of play with your own mind. Like, for instance, if I ask you right now to imagine a tree, that tree will come into manifestation. If I ask you to imagine an ocean scene, the ocean scene will come into manifestation. It's a manifestation of your knowledge. Now, say you are able to actually hold that vritti, hold that image. In fact, this is actually a practice that we do. It's called upasana, where you hold an image, hold an imagination, which in the Vedas can be very defined, or even in the Upanishads it would be very clearly defined, so that you would imagine something, imagine an image of the Lord, or imagine the Ishwara Swarupa as it's stated for you to imagine step by step, to actually imagine that and to hold it, or to imagine a vision of or a posture of Shiva, and to actually hold that in your mind without any wavering. If you're able to do that, say this is what we call upasana, if you're able to do that, you'll actually end up having, say if you're imagining, for instance, the form of Shiva sitting in his Dakshinamurti, sitting in his sthana, you'll actually end up identifying and becoming and taking on that form. You're holding the imagination so fully. So then all that exists for you, if you're able to hold it, is whatever is the content of that imagination. We do this in a much less of a way in your daydreaming, for instance. You are daydreaming a scene and your mind gets totally involved in the scene of that daydream. And so your mind is holding that scene. The scene is an imagination, right? It's a projection. It's something that comes from you. It comes out of your knowledge, out of the Maya that is under your control at that time. And it's something that is held for a certain length of time. And as it's held, what's going on in the imagination, as long as you are holding it, is real from within the imagination. See what I mean? It's not real from the outside. From the outside, you know, that's just Maya, that's just imagination. You have a lot of things to say about it. It comes into being, it goes out of being. It has no independent being apart from me. We'll say all of those things. But we can actually, if we hold that imagination, then whatever is going on within the imagination has a degree of reality from within, you know, from within the standpoint of the imagination. And so this creation, so that's what we have in a limited, what we have available to us in a limited way. But for Ishwara, the imagination, the manifestation of knowledge is infinite, and it lasts for a really long time. Your daydream lasts for a few seconds. But the Ishwar imagination, the manifestation of knowledge, is a manifestation of infinite knowledge, and it lasts for a really long time. But the order of reality is not that different from the standpoint, in this sense, from the standpoint of the one within the imagination. This is all real, you know. But from the standpoint of the self, or from the sat-chit, this imagination, infinite, no matter how large it is, and no matter how long-lasting it may be, it has no reality other than me. And so, if you think of it like that, other than me, other than the conscious being, and so this infinite creation is totally dependent upon the self for its being, and the time-space exists within it, not from within the self from whom the imagination has come. And so just like if I ask you to have your imagination of a meadow with a, you know, walking in the meadow and the birds and the trees and the grass in the meadow and all of the activity going on in the meadow, that activity in the time and space that is occurring only from within, from the standpoint of the meadow, which has been manifest by you. It's not occurring from the standpoint of the self. Mm-hmm. See that? There's no time and space, and there's no duality, or there's no change from the standpoint of the self. That all of that activity takes place within. Now, say the creation, so now going to Ishwar, kind of understanding the parallel between your little meadow imagination and the infinite imagination, infinite manifestation of knowledge of Ishwar, there is as though an infinite sankalpa, you know, an infinite manifestation of knowledge that is held for millions of years or whatever from the standpoint of within. And now, within, when the creation comes into manifestation, what the Puranas and the mythology or the cosmology, of Vedic cosmology, will say is within that manifestation appears Manus, the first Manus. Manus are like the first human beings. And those beings are going to be part of the Ishwar Sankalpa. And there also occurs Rishis, the Rishis. So here the four Manus are, there's many different Manus. Swamiji talks about this a little bit in his Bhashya. I don't know very much about it, so I'll just tell you a little bit what I know, which is absolutely limited. There are four Manus that come along with the creation, part of Ishwar Sankalpa. And I think that from those Manus come the seven Rishis. And from the seven Rishis, all human beings are born. That's why in India, every person has what's called a gotra. A gotra, they will recite their lineage all the way back to their Rishi. The Rishi from which they... And this gotra is something that's passed down from generation to generation to generation. And so when, say, for instance, when a student comes to Swamiji and asks to study, that student will pranam and recite his gotra, taking it all the way back to the Rishi. And it's considered a tragedy if that chain is lost, if that gotra is broken. It's considered a terrible tragedy. You've lost your lineage. So this lineage, kind of like a sacred fire that's passed from family to family to family through the generations, this gotra, the gotra, which is the recitation of the lineage that takes you all the way back to your rishi, is recited and continued. It's considered very, very sacred. And so this gotra is taking you back to the original, one of the original seven rishis, you know, which come from the four Manus, or they're simultaneous. I'm not sure of all of that, I don't remember, and I don't really know that much about it. But what I do know is that each of the Rishis and the four Manus, the four first humans, are part of Ishwar Sankalpa, and their mind, they themselves are Jivanmuktas. They themselves have knowledge, and they abide in, their mind has that, what's the word that he uses here? Madbhavaha. Means that their mind is, their bhava is in me. So this word bhava, it's used even today a lot, especially in music. When a musician is singing a raga, And in India, all of the ragas, the musical scales that they use, the songs that they sing, they're all really centered around Bhagawan or some aspect of the Lord or some aspect of a devata or around the qualities of Ishwara. So many are that. And the bhav, what they call the bhav in Hindi, the bhavana, is the feeling, the total absorption into the essence of the one, of a love for the one of whom they are singing. And so it means that whole emotional feeling of love and devotion that comes in reference to the song that they're singing. And they're usually singing about Ishwara, the Lord, in some form or another, or a Devi in some form or another. And so that when they talk about that bond, they're talking about the mind that is totally absorbed in, you know, totally committed to reveling in the nature of the Lord. And so when someone is singing in India, the audience is always looking to be swept away by that bhava that the singer himself or herself is swept away in. And in fact, what makes a singer great that people will go anywhere to see is that. It's not so much the voice, yes, but if that's not there, then it's nothing. And so it's that love, that total commitment to is the bhav. So here they say, these maharshis, all of them, their being is totally absorbed in me. They're considered jivan, they're considered muktas, they're in, people who have jnanam, they're an embodiment of knowledge, you can look like that. Those people are manasa jata. These people come directly from my mind. They're born of my mind. The whole creation is born of my mind, from Ishwara's standpoint. But these beings are not born from a human being. See what I mean? These beings come with the creation. So they're part of my sankalpa. So if you see the mountains come, the sky comes, the rivers come, you know, the whole creation comes, these beings also come, and these are considered the first beings. So this is part of the mythology or the cosmology that they look at in terms of the manifestation of the creation. So who are the first beings? This is how they talk about it.
Yeah, and are they operating in this order of reality?
I think so, yeah, because we are. And the rishis, this physical body, this is a physical body, and it goes back to that rishi. Right, so... But all of these details are there. I just don't know them. But they're there to be found. I would suggest, say, if you're interested, there are some translations of the Puranas. There's many different Puranas. One I think I have is the Vishnu Purana that's translated. And you can read all of these details. They kind of come in like a story form. You know, and also in the Ramayana, the Mahabharata, that they have so many sections that they deal with these kind of things, but the Puranas would probably be the best place. So here, Krishna is saying these things. It's not only that all of these qualities from verse 4 and 5, all of these dispositions have come from me. Also the Manus and the Rishis, also they come from me, with me. They come from me along with the creation, he says. And from them come all of humanity. So that's how his... they deal with this. So that's all I can say about it. I don't have a lot of knowledge about this. And Swamiji doesn't spend a lot of time on this either. If you notice in his commentary, it's a half a page or something, because it's not immediately relevant, but it's also useful, you know, because there's a message in it. I think the message is that When you think of this creation as being beginningless and cyclical, there is no real creation. You know, when we think of a creation, you think of, well, maybe like as the creation comes from a seed or something, or it's created. But you don't think, I don't think, of your dream as a creation, or your daydream, say your dreams, you don't think of it as a creation, you think of it as an appearance or as a manifestation of something. Or say your imagination, I don't think we think of our imagination as a creation, as though we're creating it, as though we're making it. This creation is not viewed as a creation, as though someone, that there is a Lord creating it. You know, some Lord got out his hammer and whatnot and built the whole thing. You know, created it. Composed it in his mind and then created it. It's not viewed that way at all. It's viewed as a manifestation of knowledge, and the knowledge is already there. So like for you, if I ask you to, with the meadow imagination, imagine the meadow, it imagines, you resolve it. Imagine it, resolve it. The reason you can imagine the meadow is because meadow knowledge is already there. If meadow knowledge isn't there, there's no meadow to imagine. See what I mean? So here with the creation, if creation knowledge isn't already there, there's no manifestation of it. And if it's not already there in unmanifest form, then how can it come into manifestation? There's no material there to build it. So there's no creation. There's no building of the creation. There's the manifestation of infinite knowledge. And that infinite knowledge already has to be there. So now, or it can't come into manifestation. So now what about the jivas? What about self-knowledge? What about knowledge that's manifest in this creation? What about human beings? How do they come into manifestation? How do they come into being? Are they already there as manifest? Are they already there in unmanifest condition coming into manifestation? See what I mean? Or knowledge, is it already, where does it come from? So in terms of self-knowledge or knowledge of Ishwar, it has to already be there. If you want to get into evolution and all of that kind of stuff, then that's fine. But now when you think of, well, what about evolution? The details of evolution, we don't know. Evolution is pretty much accepted now. But it makes no difference because evolution takes place within the creation, within time. And so if evolution is the truth, then the manifestation, the development of a human being from some other lesser life form takes place over a great deal of time. But at some point it becomes a human being, and at that point it's manifest as a human being. But all of that still has to be, all of those laws, all of that order still has to be there in unmanifest condition. To be, from the standpoint of Vedanta. We don't look at this as just a physical creation. We look at it as a infinite manifestation of knowledge. So I'm starting to talk circularly here anyway, but he's pointing this out. Okay. And so now, what he says, and I'll be referring back to this verse in a minute. Let's go to the next one. Etam vibhutim yogam cha. Etam vibhutim yogam cha. Mama yo veti tatvataha. Mama yo veti tatvataha. So vikam pena yogena. So vikam pena yogena. Yujate natra samshayaha. Yujate natra samshayaha. Etam vibhutim yogam cha. Mama yaha veti tatvataha. Saha avikampena yogena yujyate na atra samshayaha. He says, yaha veti tatvataha. The one who yaha veti knows tatvataha, really, knows the truth, the one who knows how things are in reality. So, yaha veti tatvataha, the one who knows tatvataha, really, these etam vibhutim yogam cha mama. He says, the one who knows really what all of this is, all of this, all of the vibhutis, means all of these manifestations of glory. Vibhuti is really the glory of the Lord. All of these things in the creation, all of these manifestations that we call vibhuti, and my relationship with them, so Ishwara talking, Krishna talking is Ishwara, the one who knows really what all of this is, what this manifest creation is in reality, and yogam, mama yogam, and my relationship, my yoga, my association, my relationship with it. The one who knows really what this is, this manifest creation, and who I am in relationship to it. What is the relationship between me and this manifest creation? Saha avikampena yogena yujate. That one, I would say like this, with the yogena, that one has come into avikampena, unswerving, and kampa means like to shake or something to be unstable. So that person comes into a yoga, relationship with me, which is unshakable. Of this, there is no doubt. Okay, so what that means is, now here they've already, in the previous verse, they've talked about this whole creation and everyone in it is really just my manifestation, a manifestation of me. It comes into being, it is born of my mind. All beings are born of my mind. In fact, the whole creation is born of my mind. If I say born of my mind, it means born of Maya. This whole manifestation is born of Maya. What is this manifestation of knowledge? What is its relationship to me? Those who know the relationship of this manifestation, what its relationship is to me, those people become absolutely unshakably steady in their understanding of me, in their attainment of me, in their joining with me. They become absolutely steady because what they realize in the recognition of the relationship, Ishwara talking, as of the relationship of this creation to me, is that that relationship of this creation to me is exactly the relationship of this creation to them. Because in the end, the recognition is this, that the self that I am is the self from whom the whole creation comes. This body, mind, sense organs, all being part of the sankalpa, the total sankalpa that has come. And so myself, which is the self of Ishwara, is the self of this entire creation. If that is recognized, there's nothing that can shake it. If that's not recognized, then that person hasn't recognized the relationship of this creation to me, Ishwara is talking. So you have to remember the whole vision of the Upanishad is in the Mahavakya, that you are that. Means the conscious being that you are is the conscious being from which the whole creation has come. And so if you understand who Ishwara is, then you have to understand who you are. You can't understand who Ishwara is without understanding who you are. Because if you don't understand that, then you are something separate from Ishwara. Whereas in fact, in a meadow imagination, if you imagine in the meadow imagination, you put your body, mind, sense organs in that imagination, the self that you are is the self of the entire imagination, including the body, mind, sense organs that you're identified with. So that person in the imagination has to be able to say, I am Ishwara. Right? See that? If you have the imagination as Ishvara, and he's talking about these rishis also and the manus who know this, if you have a meta imagination, okay, so just imagine this, then I think this might get clear. You have I ask you to have imagination of the meadow. You have a meadow imagination. And then as you have that imagination, you decide to put four rishis in it, or four manus in it. Now they're part of your sankalpa. What if you say, instead of that, let's put it this way, you have a meadow imagination, and then you join that imagination. You put yourself in there. And you put some other people in there too. Say you were to do that. You can do that because it's your maya. Okay. Mm. Now, from your standpoint, you, the one from whom the imagination has come, you're Ishvara. For you, there's no ignorance. There's no problem at all. All of this is your imagination, including all of the beings. Each being is you. Each tree is you. Each animal is you. The sky is you, the sun is you, there's nothing that's not you. The whole thing has come from you, as you are Ishvara in reference to that meadow imagination. But now, to be a Jivan Mukta, to be a Jiva within the imagination, and to be enlightened, you have to know clearly that you are the whole. Because you are, from the standpoint of the conscious being. Because the conscious being, me, the self from whom the imagination has come, is the self of the whole imagination and every part of it. That is no problem for you at all. But that's your nature. That's natural for you. But for any jiva within the imagination, that jiva is bound by ignorance. It has sense organs and a mind which is limited and only takes up a little bit of space within that meadow imagination. And so this jiva just thinks of itself as a limited being within the meadow. And then say this jiva says, if there is a God, you know, please come and tell me what is really going on. Send me somebody. And so then that jiva gets a guru. Okay? And then that guru teaches that jiva what that guru has been taught by his guru or her guru. And what is it? Have they been taught? What have they been made to recognize? Is that the self that they are, that illumines their body, mind, sense organs, the conscious being, the me, that is the self of their body, mind, sense organs, that me, in fact, is the self of the whole dream universe. And that self that you are has no time or space. The time and space and the extension, you know, the spatial extension, the three-dimensional world, all of that belongs to the imagined manifest universe, not to me. That's why the me is not big or small. It can't be divided. It can't be divided by time or stretched, divided by space or stretched or moving through time. It simply is me. It's not a big me or a small me, because there's no space. It's just simply one me, like an infinite point that can't be extended in any direction, but which is all that there is. And so now, from within the meadow, you're a character in the meadow that enjoys the self from which the non-dual self, from whom the whole meadow has come. So this little character says, I am, referring to me, the one from whom the whole meadow has come. The little creature, the little animal, doesn't say in words, but it feels, I am. The I am that it is the one self from whom the whole meadow has come. And then the Ishvara is the one whose identity is from the standpoint of the whole meadow. So for Ishvara, there's no ignorance at all. For the little animals, there's ignorance. For the living beings, there's ignorance. For the plants, there's ignorance. Different levels of ignorance. Because the upadhi, the conditioning adjunct, is limited. But really, the truth of the whole thing is that there's one self, which is the self from which the whole meadow has come, And every part of the meadow belongs to the meadow. So it's like this. There's one manifestation, one infinite manifestation that comes from me, the conscious being, me, this very self that I am, that has no dimension in terms of time and space. It's like an infinite point. There's nothing but it. For there to be a right, there's no right side or left side or up or down, because there's nothing but me. And from me, this infinite manifestation that we call the universe has come, and I am the being which is the self of the whole thing. Like if you close your eyes and you imagine a universe, then you become the size of the universe? No, you don't become the size of the universe, but the universe is not away from you. So in a sense, you become the size of the universe from within the universe. But it's not like you've stretched. You know, but that is what you call a paradox? It's not a paradox if you understand it, but here's an infinite time and space of infinite size that has its, for its being, me, that has no size. I'm not about size. Size takes place within time and space. Time and space is part of the imagination. It's not part of me. But there is no part of this infinite universe that is other than or away from me. And so this, in fact, is me. It is my manifestation. This is my manifestation of knowledge. It isn't anybody else's. This is what I look like. We say, this is what Bhagawan looks like. Yes, this is what Bhagawan looked like, and I am Bhagawan. Speaking from the standpoint of me, the conscious being. And so then, if I am Bhagawan, I am Ishwara, because Ishwara doesn't take himself to be, you know, the Maya, I mean the manifestation that comes and goes. I am the self. I am the one from whom the manifestation comes. That's who I am. It's like if you have a thought, like if I ask you to have an imagination, I'm not the imagination. I'm the one from whom the imagination comes. But when the imagination is there, it's nothing other than me. It has no self other than me. That is the relationship. It's called Satyam Mitya. The imagination comes, and that imagination is totally 100% dependent on me for its being. There's no second thing there. There's only me there that is the very self of this whole thing. And so this manifestation, this world, or this dream from an individual standpoint, is totally dependent on me for its being, and I'm totally free of it. Like if you wake up from a dream, it makes no difference. Nothing has happened. Right? You're not dependent on the dream at all. The dream is there, and it totally depends on you. The dream goes away. Nothing has happened. It's absolutely, in a sense, irrelevant, shockingly irrelevant. Because nothing at all has happened, even though the whole world was there. The whole world goes away, nothing has happened. Thousands of people have died, creation has been destroyed. Nothing has happened. That's Satyam Mitya. If you take a wet clay pot and you squash it into a plate, nothing has happened. Because nothing's happened to the clay. You know? And so that's why we don't experience anything. Anything of content to have happened. So the creation is exactly like that. So this creation now, and this is something that for a person, as a person sees this, understands this, there's no way to shake it. Because the fact is that in just as a jiva now, once you've recognized this, what are you recognizing? Okay? What you're recognizing is that now, as a limited being with body, mind, sense organs, through your sense organs and your mind, you are having the Ishwara experience. Right? Because this is only Ishwara. Anything that's manifest is only Ishwara. So now, in this experience that you're having, there is not any part of it that's away from you. So the content of your experience at this moment, every single part of your experience, and thought after thought after thought, every experience, every part of your experience has pervasive to it you, which is changeless, the changeless self from which it has come. And once that's recognized, there's not a thing you can do about it, because there's no way that you can remove or cover or not or get away from the changeless self that you are, that pervades the totality of your experience, no matter what it is. Just like the clay, no matter what, the pot, no matter what happens to it, whether it's destroyed and changed into a pot going into a plate or whatever, the truth of it can never be escaped. You can't get outside of it, the truth of it. And like that, once you see it, you can never recognize it, you can never get away from it, because it's the substance of every experience that you have. Okay, so now, when that's recognized, there's no doubt about it, because it's impossible to escape it. No matter what machinations you do, what type of logics you do, what type of imaginations you use, or what type of whatever you try to do it to escape, you still feel that thought process. So nothing can be done. So he says, not here. There's no doubt here that can take place once it's understood. And so, let's see if I can. Okay, well, I want to say something more about this rather than go on to this next verse. So I kind of wanted to do that. But let me say this about it. That being the case, when you recognize that your own, I would say, your own swabhava, your own nature, that is really the self of all of your experience, then when as a person comes into this knowledge, what do we do with it, really? What do we do with our knowledge? Mm. Because what you find is that the mind is just habitually, the mind is always going out, you know, trying to kind of worried about what's going to happen next, or, you know, what I have to accomplish next, or what's the next step in my life that I need to accomplish in order to be successful or in order to make me happy. And then we worry, maybe perhaps our mind is going off into the past, worrying about the things that we haven't done properly, that is going to blow it for my future, and all of these kind of things. It's going in creating, the mind naturally will just create scenarios for the future and worry about scenarios in the past. And then in the present, it won't really be in the present often. It'll be just thinking about all of the tensions that are happening in the present, and then building up on all kinds of machinations around all of that. And so what is the sadhana for that, really, is just continually bringing your mind home. Now, bringing your mind home is really nothing more than just recognizing that you're still the same self. The self that you're seeking, you know, the self that is whole and complete, is fully present in this scenario and in the next scenario and in the next scenario. Whatever the scenario is, your self is there, whole and complete. And so now it's a matter of understanding certain things that are actually very profound and very simple at the same time. If you bring your mind back to yourself and realize that this is what I am and this is what I will always be, even if I do, within this plane of existence, create this new scenario. Say I have a new scenario in my mind that if I attain that, then that will be good, that will make me happy and be, you know, be an improvement. But say now I get the improvement that I've been imagining. Now here I am in the improved condition. Okay. Now what do I have to do in the improved condition? because my mind continues to do exactly the same thing. So now again, I have to bring myself, my mind back to the one who has not gone anywhere, who is exactly the same, who is exactly the same self, who has not changed at all, who has not improved at all, who has not gotten worse, who has nothing to do with time, has nothing to do with space, who is always the same, who is always full and complete, who is really that Shiva with a half smile, you know, the image of the Lord with that half smile, and then the little boy says, "Hey, Mommy, who's Shiva meditating on?" That actually, he's meditating on the self, that very whole, complete being that I am, that is there, changelessly abiding in every single scenario. But my mind habitually goes on creating scenarios, you know, that are filled usually with some form of anxiety. Because the reason it's filled with anxiety is because the scenario hasn't occurred yet, right? That's why. It's because the scenario is an imagination. It's an imagination. Now, the scenario is going to have some anxiety because the imagination is either a good imagination, and so then as I imagine the scenario, this is what I want, and I may not get it because of this obstacle, this obstacle, this obstacle. So the positive scenario that has not occurred yet, but which I'm dreaming of, that hasn't occurred, and so there's obstacles in the way. There's also the negative scenario. This could occur. This could occur, and that would not be good. Right? And then I see all of the things that could actually happen to make this negative scenario occur. And so now in the negative imagination, there's also stress. Positive imagination, there's also stress. But in either scenario, whatever it happens to be, I'm basically not living in the world at that moment. I'm not in the world. I'm in the scenario, the imagined scenario, with all of its affect. And so what do I have to do? Very simply, for somebody who has knowledge, you know, somebody who is gaining knowledge and their mind is still taking them for a ride, you know, what do we have to do? We just simply have to bring the mind back to the recognition that, you know, I am here in this scenario, and I will be here in the next scenario, and the next scenario, and the next scenario. I am the self of all scenarios. I am the self of all scenarios. The scenario is not going to reach me. I'm already here. Right? And so rather than have my mind being taken on this ride, I become one who's a madbhavaha. That the Atma itself, Ishwara itself, is the scenario. What is happening here is Ishwara. This is where my commitment is. Now, not just this as samsara, but this is Ishwara. And if I see it as I bring my mind back to that, this is Ishwara, then myself is, then Ishwara has me for itself. You see what I mean? That's the sadhana. To become this, as we'll see in a verse, couple of verses from now, this matchittaha, one whose mind is in me. All that means sounds fancy, but all it is bringing the mind back to the reality of myself being the one who is changelessly present in every scenario. And it is this self that will be there in the next scenario, and the next scenario, and the next scenario. This self has not changed at all and will not change in the next scenario. So let your mind bring it back now and let it be here. It's really like the graham cracker story, you know, Swamiji's graham cracker, the box of graham crackers.
Animal crackers.
Animal crackers. The animal crackers. They're all graham crackers. You know the animal crackers?
I don't think so. I know what they are.
The little box of animal.
Yeah, we all got our boxes.
Yeah, I used to always get one. You know, a box of animal crackers with a little treat inside and everything. But they're, you know, what's the difference between the horse and the giraffe? It is a graham cracker. Graham cracker is graham cracker. You know, so that's our situation. But It doesn't make any difference. You are exactly the same. Whether all these dreams come true or they don't come true or the bad scenarios come true, it's still this moment. It is this moment. And I am still exactly the same. There's been no change for me at all. And so I have to learn to just, when my mind is spinning out of control like this, what do I have to do? It's just simply bring it back until it doesn't spin anymore, you know? Until I am happy, until the mind has recognized it, has seen this clearly, then the mind stays here and lives the life. Lives the life that is here at this moment, moment after moment after moment. The Swamiji says, every moment I just do my best. And it's real. I've known him for so many years. This is the moment. This is the moment. This is the moment. This is the moment. And the mind resting in the self lives this moment, and the next one, and the next one, and the next one. Otherwise, the mind is creating pain. You know, and there's not even, you're not even able to experience some real pain, you know, that's occurring at this moment. You're out in la-la land, where the mind isn't even, is so lost in the imagination that there's not even any remembrance, in a sense, of the stable me that is sitting there. It's like, you know, I can be here and totally lost in a daydream. It's like the mind is caught up totally in the daydream. We got caught up here. We're living more in the daydream than just in the present reality. Mm. But for Jnani, it's living here in the present reality, you know, with a recognition of it as Ishvara. Recognizing it as Ishvara is just like how you are with your dream, you know, with your imagination. You see, you are the Ishvara. Here is a jiva. I have to be the Ishvara. Means I have to let this body, mind, sense organs be part of this, and this exists in me. There's no reason not to see that. The reason for not seeing that is just ajnana. It's because it's not known. But once it's recognized, that is the reality. Your presence is not contained. The me is not contained. This body, mind, sense organs exist in this room, and this room exists in me. That is the experiential reality once it's recognized. So all of this exists in consciousness, all of this exists in the satchit that is myself. And that's not just, I don't mean that as a, like a concept. What you have to do, the reality of it, where you can see it, right? If I ask you to imagine a meadow, that's not a concept. That your being is the self of the meadow. I'm pointing out a reality which you can see, right? It's not a concept. But the vritti, the thought modification that is in the form of the meadow, which I am the self of, is not any different than a thought modification in the form of this room, which I am the self of. Right? I have a thought modification of this room because of my sense perception. The sense perception forms a thought in the mind. The thought in the mind is pervaded by the satchit, which I am. I am the conscious being, which is the self that illumines the whole thought. In either case, whether it's an imagination of a meadow or a perception, both are thoughts. In the one, I have no trouble seeing, recognizing my pervasiveness or the stability of my being as the self of the whole meadow. I have no trouble. It is harder because of the Dehatma Buddhi, because of the tremendous identification in this body, to recognize that myself, my being, is not at all contained in this body, that it is equally the self of the whole room, of my experience of the room. Because really, you're only experiencing a thought modification. So you need to be able to recognize that. And then we can go out and look at to see if this room, these objects have any reality other than your being. But I'm just talking experientially. Thought modification, thought modification. What's the difference? You are your being pervades changelessly pervades both situations. Say you have a meadow upasana, where you're holding the meadow and you're watching a whole world take place within your meadow, imagined meadow. You are the self of that imagined meadow. You can get that. You can recognize it. Now here, you have a sense, you have a sin, a vritti, a thought modification that includes this physical body and this physical world. But the pervasiveness and the changelessness of your being is as apparent if you'll let yourself see that. Mm. And then once you let yourself see that, then see if you can touch or alter in any way yourself as the one who is the self of this experience. You can't touch it, you can't change it. It's the same self that's there in every experience, and it starts coming more, that recognition starts coming more and more to the forefront because you're paying attention to it. Mm-hmm. You pay attention to yourself. And then as you pay attention to it, you see that it's always exactly the same. It's never not here. It's me. And I'm the very being. It comes now to the forefront instead of being some shady concept. Mm. The fact that you don't even that you take for granted but don't even think about. Mm. And so for what he's working here toward now is that really the bringing that, what happens when that is brought to the forefront. That's what these next three verses are about. And I wanted to do them today, but
we didn't do them next time.
I did them next time. Now we have to do them next time. I did the content today. Sorry. Yeah. Purnamada, Purnamidam, Purnat, Purnamudachyate, Purnasya Purnamadaya, Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.